This is a Pinball News production.
Okay, here we go. The name of this game I designed back in around 1980 is Chief Bankaflip Galactic Poker Dice. And as you might imagine, there's a story behind that. I started playing pinball around age of five. My dad got me into it, taking me to bowling alleys and arcades and things. And in my teen years, I actually started collecting pinballs. And, you know, of course, once you start collecting pinballs, you start drawing little designs of how you'd want to design them. And so I'd been doing that for years. And when I went down to college at University of Virginia, I actually took my pinball machine with me in my dorm room and had that there. And eventually, while I was there, I got a job at an arcade in town being their pinball mechanic. That was pretty cool. And another guy named Dave Freneau and I started talking more seriously about, hey, we should design a pinball machine. And having access to parts and stuff, which I'd never had before, was kind of cool. And we were dealing with various distributors, and one of them had time warps on closeout. So I could get a brand new machine in crate for $700. And I thought, well, now's my chance to make my own machine. You know, that'll give me a whole pile of parts, all the electronics, everything I need, all brand new. So I scraped together $700, brought a brand new time warp, never played it, just stripped it, and immediately started making my game. So Dave and I had been talking about what we should, you know, what theme we should have for the game, and then we decided there's themes they keep using over and over and over and over again. So we went with Chief Bankaflip Galactic Poker Dice. It uses all the themes that get used over and over and over again. Then there's just some examples of historical games that used them. And it was weird. I mean, now that I actually worked at Williams, this doesn't make any sense. But back then, I was kind of paranoid, you know, what would Williams think if I was taking apart one of their games and remaking it into another game, and you know, would that get me in trouble? And I was kind of paranoid about all that. And then, you know, one day in the midst of all this, this game comes out, Alien Poker. I'm like, holy crap, they've got my room bugged. Chief Bankaflip Galactic Poker Dice and Alien Poker, that can't be a coincidence. But and actually, it's funny, Steve Kordek had a lot to do with that game. And years later, when I worked at Williams, I was talking to John Papaduke, and he had, when I mentioned this game I'd built, he said, wow, you know, you should have brought it up and shown it to Steve Kordek, who at the time was running pinball at Williams. He probably would have hired you on the spot, you know, because lots of people talk about building games but never actually do it. Actually, Steve's here. Would you have hired me on the spot, Steve? Yeah, he says he would. Okay. That would have changed my life, but you know, I was just a shy nerd from Virginia. I wasn't going to truck a game up to Chicago and show up on the door of Williams. That just wasn't in my my things to do. So anyway, we had Chief Bankaflip Galactic Poker Dice, and then, you know, even though I'm kind of a, you know, a pinball nerd, I'm also an 18-year-old guy. So really, I thought, well, if you want to include all the themes of pinball machines ever, it would actually be this. But they always do that with the artwork instead of actually putting it in the name. So I figured I'd do that too. And I never really did any artwork for this game. But on the original kind of crude plywood mock-up I did of it, I did pencil in some artwork, and I'm not an artist at all. So here's my rendition of how I would have incorporated that into the theme. That's the extent of my art abilities there too. Da Vinci, I'm not. So the other thing, I don't know if you noticed on the first slide, everything about this game was in-jokes. So in addition to the theme name, also had to have a manufacturer name. So I came up with Willie Gern Incorporated, which is just Williams, Bally, Gottlieb, and Stern. And of course, the Incorporated comes from game plan, because that's about all the mention they deserve, given their where they were in the industry. And you may wonder why it's Incorporated. And that's another in-joke, because GamePlan's first game was Sharpshooter, and then they did their next game, Coney Island, and it was the exact same game with everything just rearranged. But Coney Island was one letter short from Sharpshooter, so they made it Coney Island and put an exclamation point on the end of it. So Incorporated had to have an exclamation point. And the arcade I was a mechanic at was named Noel's, because the guy's daughter was named Noel, but he wanted his arcade name to look real cool, so he put the umlaut over the E in Noel's, so Gern got an umlaut over it too. Actually, years ago, I did a logo for this. I carefully traced out, you know, the first three letters of Williams, the last two of Bally, all in the perfect scripts of their logos, and try as I might, I couldn't come up with that to show you guys here, but someday I will. So I set about with this time warp cabinet and a bunch of parts, and man, you wouldn't believe how hard I looked for the plywood they make pinball playfields out of. That stuff's just not known to anybody. I went to a lot of lumber places, and nobody had it. So to start with, I just got some crappy plywood from the Home Depot across the street from the arcade and set about, you know, hacking stuff together. And so here's a closer version of it. Hang on. I even brought my cute laser pointer here. So I had done the lights. We're going to spell out Chief Bank of Flip Galactic Poker Dice there. There's 25 drop targets. This is the coolest part about the game. There's a bank of 25 drop targets, like Breakout up there. So that you got 25 letters right there. That sucked up most of them. And then some various targets around there would get the other ones. And knowing what I know now, this string of lights, the very first thing that would happen to that playfield the first time you put it on the prop rod is it would break in half. But so it's a good thing I never actually put lights in my playfield, but that's how I was going to do them. So in this one, again, there's just this giant hole. The targets are sitting and everything's kind of mocked up. It originally had a couple of, you know, the standard in-lane, out-lane thing, but that got in the way of the very targets or vice versa. So I ended up with this kind of kicker hole over there. And there's a shot here that'll go up and hit the targets and stuff, but you have to remember to lift your upper flipper as it goes by. So I thought that was kind of clever. And then, you know, here was the piece de resistance. Here was my 25 drop targets. From the time I decided to make this, this was the shot I wanted to see. You know, you got this wall of targets. You get five of them down, and there's five more. And five more down, and there's five more. Ah! So, I think what we got, like Solar Fire and Target Alpha and all those have 20 targets. Has anyone else done 25? I think this is going to be the record here. Then later on, I finally got some real plywood. Brady Distributing Company, you know, I had been bugging them. I'd been buying all these parts from them, Very Targets and Five Bank Target Assemblies and stuff. And I finally said, can I get some blank playfields? And they thought that was the stupidest thing they'd ever heard. But they called up Bally, who also thought it was the stupidest thing they ever heard, but said, sure, you know, well, $50 a piece. Or I don't know what the retail versus wholesale was, but they sold them to me for $50 a piece. And thank goodness they already had the plunger lane routed. I wasn't sure how I was going to do that. But they were totally blank except for the plunger lane routed in there. So I kind of shredded one doing the initial setup, you know, made some mistakes, and then this was the second one. And, of course, remember, it's all in joke, so it's a black wood instead of a white wood. And here's the final layout here. So the basic game is you got the 25 drop targets, you got the upper flippers and the lower flippers. There's twin Very targets. Hey, isn't that cool? Some bullseyes there, this lane that goes through that actually ends up hitting this bullseye up here quite a bit. There's actually a skill shot if you drop it right in there. Or if you go back behind the drop targets, there's a lane back here, and ooh, that's weird. In 1980 and 81, no one was sending balls under the playfield, but I did, and it would come out a baseball pitching machine flap right there. I was trying to include everything, and this was the kitchen sink game. So that's the basic layout. And then here's the underside of it. I used PVC pipe for the under playfield thing. I had no metalworking shop, very few abilities and no tools to do it with, so this stuff's all kind of crudely done. My original game I ever owned was a Williams Starfire, and that had a gobble hole, so I'd seen how they'd done under playfield troughs that way, but I didn't have any way to weld metal and stuff, so I figured, ooh, PVC, so that was kind of, you know, flame bent with a propane torch there at the various seams, but it got the job done. And I used like a kickback kicker and some mangled metal there to get it out of the baseball flap. And I made this monstrous drop target assembly there, all hand-wired. And here's an edge-on view of the drop target assembly. It's got, there's a coil on each side and a bar that runs in between them to pull a row of targets up at a time. And then I used the Williams targets because I could sandwich them all in rows like this. And then instead of using the metal brackets that they originally came with, I made some kind of plexiglass pieces there and some standoffs to get it all sitting just right, and it was a real mess. And what's really funny is, as a guy who was working on pinball machines part-time, I had nothing but bad words for the idiots at these companies who made these impossible-to-maintain assemblies. And then I made one myself. Now, obviously, at the time, they were using those silly horseshoe contacts on the backs of the targets, so all the target banks I got had those, but there was no way I was going to be able to not only fit all those in, but that really would have been a disaster trying to fix a horseshoe contact in the middle of that mess. So I made a plate on the bottom that had 25 little switches like they had started using on Black Knight for drop targets. A lot of the metal you'll see in here is coin box lids. That was my source of metal for everything, because no one ever uses coin box lids to cover coin boxes. So that all worked there. And you can see the two, there's like a aluminum bar that goes in between each pair of coils to reset the rows. And then there it is. That was the shot I was looking for, with the coin box lid with 25 agonizingly hacked through holes in it with my drill and jigsaw and file, lots and lots of filing. So that did the trick there. And then there's the player's view of the whole thing. I was quite happy the night I got that finished. This is about mid-1981 when I finally got all that done. And I'd always liked Vary targets, so I thought, ooh, let's have two of them. Okay, now obviously I've got this game physically going, but, you know, how am I going to make it run? Some people like take an existing game and rearrange the parts and just use the original programming, but I didn't want to do that. I had all kinds of interesting ideas. So I had previously reverse-engineered the video game Asteroids, so I thought, well, I'll reverse-engineer this pinball machine. So I pulled out all, whatever it was, 4K of program code and 2K of the game ROM. But at the time, I didn't even own a computer. So the way I did it was I had a little board with toggle switches and LEDs, and I actually hand-cranked through every address and sight-read the binary off the LEDs and wrote it down in hexadecimal, and then used a book to look at. It was a mess. Anyway, I did all that on legal pads, and there's one of my old legal pads where I was doing the Time Warp game ROM. So even just getting all the data out was a chore because I didn't have a computer, then I had to figure out what it all meant. But I did it. Of course, I later on got a computer, and I had bought an EEPROM programming board that I could borrow someone's Apple II computer to use to program the chips. So I eventually got it all running. Somewhere along the line, I had kept the playfield all these years, but not the cabinet or anything else. And so I bought an old Time Warp cabinet to put it in, but I had to recreate the program, and nothing I found on my old Apple discs really worked. So I had to kind of do this all over again. But this time I had computers. This time I'm working for the guy that wrote the operating system that did the game, so that helped a lot. I mean, it was a lot easier the second time around. I guess I've got some videos now to show you the game in action. I've actually got the game out in the hall, and you'll be able to play it, sort of. I'll show you some videos of it in action. Now, I was thinking of dragging it in here, but I thought, well, that'll take a lot of time, and then everyone would have to crowd around it, so let's just show you some videos. The first one is the drop targets in action. And the reason I used the Williams drop targets is because you could get them so close together. You just could not do that with everybody else's drop targets. But the problem with Williams drop targets is they're real bricks, especially if you hit them from a close flipper like this has. So you can see that in this video, where the harder you hit the target, the more steadfast it stays up. But here comes the brick shot. Oof. 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 Okay, but you hit it from behind, and then it goes down. I mean, that's just the way those targets work. So the other thing about the Williams targets is they had flat backs. so that you could actually, as if you spaced them correctly and a ball got behind them, it would actually roll down the back of them, which I thought was pretty clever. So I got a video of how that happens. And the ball just cranks on out. Isn't that cool? And then I got a little video of it does the bonus count up, which you can't hear because I didn't bother to do the audio here, but then you can see how they reset, which is kind of cool. And it was actually kind of fun. It's been nearly 30 years since this thing's been running, and I got it all set up and got this program going again, and for the first time in almost 30 years got to see the targets reset again, and it was, ooh, gave me the chills. But it may not do that for you, but here it is. Yeah, it's counting down the bonus right now, which you can't hear. Isn't that cool? The amazing thing... thank you. I mean, it's amazing it ever worked, but it's really amazing it still works. And it literally, the first time it did that, there was rust dust coming up off the assembly, you know, like poof, woke it up after three decades. But it still works. And then here's that cool baseball flap in action when you get the ball under the play field and it comes shooting out. Oh, isn't that cool? I was nice enough to aim it at the flipper. And then here's the instruction sheet. You probably can't read that, but I'll read some of it for you. My recollection is, I thought it was really cool when I disassembled the code and figured out you could actually score ones. The programming is all set up to allow you to score ones. So I think my original take was to have all the scores be prime, just to be interesting. But that was a little limiting. So, drop target score 25 points and add bonus of 10 points times the target number. Completing all 25 targets and going underneath the playfield scores bonus, special, and resets drop targets. Going underneath playfield on plunger shot, a skill shot, scores 1,489 points and doubles the bonus, which I am embarrassed to say I forgot that doubles bonus thing. When I reprogrammed it this last time, I didn't do the double bonus. So, oh well, you're going to get cheated if you play it. If you go underneath the play field before you complete the drop targets, which you can do, like Breakout, you can get behind the drop targets without having completed them all and get down there, that just scores 666 points. The left kicker hole scores 173 points, which I can only imagine at this point I'd already played 9 ball. I don't know where I would have gotten that number otherwise. So we'll have to give a nod to Steve Kirk for that point score. The varied targets score 1 point or 21 points, or 321 points, or 4,321 points, depending on how hard you hit them. If you hit the bullseye up by the targets 5 times and each of the other 3 bullseyes once, it lights left kicker hole for extra ball. And even on the instruction card, I put a question mark after lights because there actually are no lights on the game. It was simply, I didn't have the capability to cut holes and put in inserts. I actually bought a bunch of inserts, but I didn't have a good way to set them in without potentially ruining the playfield. So it has no lights. The bumpers score 13, 14, or 15 points each, and then 140, 150, or 160 once they're lit. And the right drain scores a point because, it's a drain. And here's the playfield again from another angle. Now, I just want to say, I was quite happy when I got it all done, but after I had played it a bunch, I realized this was really stupid. I don't care how fun varied targets are, to take up some massive amount of the side of the playfield with those dumb things just ruined the game. So I never did really like the game. You can play it and decide if you think it's any fun, but those just get in the way. And frankly, I'd set it up by taking shots off the flipper, but once the ball's in action and spinning and stuff, you can never hit it with the right flipper, but it's amazing you can actually backflip them a lot, which is weird. It's kind of fun. These, along the years, after this, by the way, I owned an arcade for a few years, and this thing slowly got stripped of parts to keep our games running. So when I put it back together more recently, I had to come up with a lot of parts. But here's something that went away. Black Knight bumper caps, of course, broke on our Black Knight all the time, and I eventually took all these to keep that running, and they're long gone. So the game out there actually doesn't have any bumper caps on it. But everything else has been pretty much restored. I was interested to find out I was wearing Puma suedes back then, too. So. Questions, yes?
And that top arch, what is that in the middle? That V?
This? Yeah, that's the skill shot. That's a hole that goes under to this pitcher flap, as does the one that goes back here. they tee together over there by the pitcher flat.
Is this another place where you can fall short? Is that
this? Yeah, that's just a Seawitch-like entry back into the bumpers or back out to the plunger lane if you get a lucky enough shot. It's just a weird little way to use the space. That's about it.
In your career, did you suggest 25 drop targets?
At Williams? Never. I was much brighter by then. I wanted to keep my job.
What was your high score?
I don't remember. I actually used, this time around, just because I had it more available, I used System 7 stuff to put the game back together again, and it was a Barracuda board in there originally, and so the current high score to date is 2,500,000, and if anyone actually hits that, I'll probably give them the game with the scoring a point per drain and stuff like that. You're not going to hit 2,500,000. There's no backlash. There never has been. Again, I'm no artist. You wouldn't want to see it if I had made a backlash. I'd appreciate it if no one steals the displays and electronics out of the game while it's out there, because there's no glass to hold them in. And that's it. It's current. I don't know if anybody saw it last night. It's in there. I actually covered it with paper, so no one could see what it was until I showed you here at this presentation. Any other questions? No? Yes? No? Okay.
Sweep any of the targets with the left
hook? You'd hope, but not really. I think two is about the. Well, I was kind of not. It wasn't a sweep like a Seawitch sweep, but. Yeah, no, it's not set up to really do that. You can get like two targets. You're lucky if you can get one target with a good solid hit. So. It's really hard to get all 25 of them down. So. And they reset every ball. So, yeah, can you imagine memory targets in there? Ooh. Okay.
If you were 18 years old?
I started when I was 18 and finished it when I was 19, yeah.
What's your game? Knowing what you know as a designer now about ball time and game time, how does that compare? Do you think you had it on the spot right?
Oh, no, this is pretty much the worst pinball ever designed. you can play it and agree with me. There's a bunch of other little problems with it. Something I didn't discover until I put it together and rediscovered when I was putting it together. Williams games don't like having a whole pile of switches closed permanently. It starts to not be able to read them correctly. And I can have up to 25 switches closed at the same time here, and it gets a little angry. So the odds of it actually recognizing that you got all 25 targets down are pretty slim at this point. But and actually, Larry gave me some ideas for fixing that. I didn't have time to. It would have required rewiring everything. But but you can have fun batting it around, see what you think.
Let me use the mic for a second. Sure. Now, I do have some good news for you. You can enter this in the art contest, and you may win best of show. So we can always do that. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.